Welcome to the Mind Money Spectrum podcast, where your hosts, Aaron Ogti and Trishul Patel, go beyond traditional finance questions to help you explore how to use your money to achieve the freedom you want in life.
In this episode, Aaron and Trishul introduce Molly Lauder, a wealth manager from Dallas, Texas. She discusses her history with student debt and how she and her husband paid off about $250,000 in student loans in 6 years. They were even able to consistently increase savings every year to save for a house. Molly then discusses the value of automation, but she also exposes the flip side dangers of wasteful subscriptions and mindless spending. By tracking your spending, you can determine if your money aligns with your goals and your happiness. In the end, Molly reinforces the message that big, immediate changes may be too drastic to stick to, but small incremental changes over time can be more powerful. And now, on to our conversation.
Hi, my name is Aaron Ogti. I'm a financial advisor in the Bay Area, and I'm here with Trishul Patel, a wealth manager on the East Coast. And today, we have our first guest, Molly Lauder, a wealth manager from Dallas, Texas.
Hi, Aaron. Hi, Molly. Great to be here today. And thanks, everybody, for listening.
Hi, y'all. Thanks so much for having me today.
Glad you could be here as well. Thank you for joining us. We hope that you feel special as our very first guest.
I do.
So today, Trishul and I have talked about our personal histories a little bit, some of the things that we've done in our lives to implement the same advice we give to clients, and we wanted to get another perspective. So we asked Molly to come on today to share her story, share some of the things she has done in her own life that mirror the same advice that she gives to clients. So Molly, my first kind of big question to you, how did you get to where you are today? What's your story, and what are some of the things that you have done specifically because you are a financial professional, knowing this is the right thing to do in my life for the long term?
Sure. So as Aaron mentioned, I'm from Dallas. Growing up, I don't want to go too far back into my history, but dad's a doctor, mom's a nurse. So they prioritized education from the very beginning in my sisters and my life. And we attended private school all the way up from kindergarten through high school. And actually the high school where I went to, we had a money class that taught us about things like credit card debt and how when you get to college, you're going to see a bunch of people approach you and try to get you to open credit cards and why that's not the best thing, no matter what they're promising up front. You know, how to handle a bank account, how to think about savings versus checking accounts, how to think about investing when you're at a young age and how that can grow over time. So simple high school class really inspired me to get into this field. I didn't know it at the time, but it certainly did. So I ended up going to finishing college at SMU. I actually started out in California. And so I was just actually talking to my parents about this in preparation for the podcast. They invested a little over $330,000 in my education, which is crazy to think about, but that's what private school all the way up costs. And so they said, completely understandably, that I was on my own for grad school. So I actually ended up going back to SMU, getting a double master's there, and leaving school where I also met my future husband. He and I together had about $225,000 worth of debt. So right out of grad school, we started dating right after grad school, and then we kind of have to tell each other this is what the barrel we're looking down.
So I'm a little curious, like, how the personal dynamics, they're like, did it work out better because you both had debt?
Well, I don't remember where we were when we first had this conversation, but I think it worked, it was a goal we both were working toward because we had such a large balance. Mine was 125, largely because I lived in Italy during grad school, and so that was a big portion of taking my loans out. And then Clay's was closer to about 100,000. And we actually approached it very differently at the start, and then eventually started thinking about it a little more similarly as our relationship progressed, and eventually we married, and this was debt we both had.
So what are some of the actions you took to address that specifically?
Yeah, so again, talked to him this morning to see how he approached it early on, since it's been quite a few years, but he actually liquidated his 401k in order to go to school. He had some nice watches that he had gathered over the years, and so he sold some watches, and then he had a family member pass away, and he used that money towards his loans at the very beginning. So all of that was at the very beginning. Then after that, he had a sturdy monthly payment of about $1,500 all the way through. For me, I didn't have any big balances. I didn't take any risk with my retirement portfolio. I just did about $1,000 a month at the start, and then gradually took that up over time. Something big that I did that he didn't do is anytime I got a bonus, anytime I happened to have a little bit of extra money in my checking account, I didn't think of that money as mine. That money belonged to my debt. So in every December or January, I paid about $8,000 worth of my balance off. I guess I should get to the punchline that Clay and I actually paid this $225,000 off in right at 6 years.
That's wonderful. That's a great accomplishment. What do you think you would have done differently based on your experience now in terms of accumulating that debt and paying it off?
What would I have done differently? I don't know that I would have changed anything. I mean, in terms of lifestyle, I think, you know, a lot of the clients I work with today have a lot of budgeting questions, and many of them have student loans. And I think they look at the student loan payment as a big imposition. I mean, to me, taking those loans was an investment in my future. And so this is something that I have to pay back. I mean, it's something that you have to take responsibility for. A couple of things that I did that, again, I wouldn't change is if anybody listening gets out of school with a bunch of debt, start with a payment that feels reasonable and stair step it over time. So I increased my payment annually. So say, for example, the first year I was doing $1,300 a month. The next year, I switched that to $1,400 a month. And that doesn't feel incrementally different, but it adds up little by little over time.
So that actually sounds very similar to the mindset that Trishel's talked about in terms of saving and pursuing financial independence. And I'm curious, where do you think that mindset came from to be so diligent about paying down the debt and increasing that payment over time and using the bonus money to pay that? Do you have any idea where that thought process came from? Was that from research? I'm really curious about that, because that's an incredible task and skill and action that you've taken, and to have that discipline that a lot of people don't really follow.
Well, thank you. It's got to be a culmination of a bunch of things. So again, talking to my parents about education when I was younger and how they handled that as a couple, they talked about things like all their friends were going on big trips and buying second homes and doing things that with the income my dad had, we would have been able to do had they not invested in education. So prioritization is a part of it from growing up. I'm sure in that class that I had in high school, we talked a little bit about incremental savings. And then there's certain books that have inspired me over time. The one, other than the class in high school, the other thing that inspired me to get into this industry was The Automatic Millionaire, which is, I think it's by David Bach. It's really older, much older book, but it basically talked about a couple that were in, I think the husband had been a plumber, and I think the wife didn't work, and they came in to talk to him, and he's kind of thinking, he has all these preconceived notions of what that might mean and how much money they might have and how this might be a waste of time. And they show their balance sheet and show all of their accounts to him, and they've got a little over $2 million. And so basically what they'd done is incrementally saved slowly a little bit at a time, invested it right, had a couple of real estate properties that were income producing, and they had just done everything right. And he was just flabbergasted. And that's the beginning of that book. And I think that's probably a part of it that weighed into it as well. But then because of business school, I just looked at my cash flow and looked at what kind of bonus and what kind of raise I was getting every year at work, and thought, if I'm getting a 5% raise, than shifting 1%, for example, into my retirement, 1% more into my retirement savings isn't going to feel any different. My paycheck will still feel similar. So I think it's looking at all of your different sources of income and your and any kind of expenses that you're doing, and think of first debt and retirement over how many dinners you want to go to or how many trips you want to take.
That sounds pretty consistent with a lot of the advice we've talked about, that it's easiest to increase your savings when you get that raise. And the added benefit is that you're actually managing your lifestyle expenses without necessarily even realizing. Like you said, it didn't feel like you were saving more or having to cut anything, but you were consciously making sure not to increase your spending.
Right. And, you know, we didn't only, my husband and I didn't only apply this to our debt pay down, the strategy that I've talked about, but I guess one thing I haven't mentioned is that while we were paying this $225,000 down, we were also saving for a home and also saving for me to quit my job and start my own firm. So we've had a lot going on, I guess, the last 6 years.
Molly, that's very commendable. And I'm glad that you've been able to get all of these different moving parts under one moving machine. Was this part of a unified plan that you had put together for yourself? And how does this align with how you might approach a similar situation with your clients?
Yeah, so I don't know that when, you know, the instant we got married that we had this plan for me to leave my job, because that was in 2016. We actually started saving in early 2017 for a down payment for a home. And I married a guy who, the family joke is that he still has his savings from when he was 4 or 5 years old. You know, any penny that he received, he saved. So he already had way more habits, good habits than I did. But we started each saving in 2017 about $1,600 a month toward this big down payment slash cushion for when I decided to leave my job, which was in early 2019. As far as what I can tell clients is that you don't have to sacrifice as much as we did in terms of the dollar amount that you're putting aside. But I think people get overwhelmed by what does a $100,000 down payment mean to me? I don't make that much. There's no way I can get there. You need to just start doing something monthly and getting in that habit and then learning to live on what's left. So what I encourage a lot of clients to do, and whether they do it is up to them, but to automate a lot of this. I mean, we live in an era where wherever you work, you can have direct deposit into more than one account. Mm. You can have auto payments for a lot of your credit cards or any of your bills. Basically, I try to encourage clients to think of, let's try to figure out how to pay everything and then give you a net amount in your checking account that you can learn to live off of. And again, for anybody that's overspending or for anybody that has credit card debt or anything else that they need to face, that's not in one day. That's something that you build and create and maybe spend 6 to 12 months with saving $100 a month or paying $100 extra off to a credit card. And then you get used to that. And then maybe you get a raise in your job and you incrementally increase it.
That's pretty neat. And does that tie into how you approach budgeting with clients? Do you come up with a solid plan? And how do the moving parts work with that?
You know, I typically start, as far as budgeting goes, I think a lot of people get nervous or overwhelmed by the idea of me handing them a budget and telling them how much they should be spending. And I don't like to budget that way personally. So Clay and I nerd out at the end of every year and pull all of our expenses for the entire year, 12 months worth, into an Excel spreadsheet and analyze after the fact rather than looking forward. So the first time I did that, I think we were either engaged or already married. And I realized that one of the biggest things I spent money on was restaurants and dinners and things like that. I think that's very natural for someone in their 20s and 30s. And that's actually what I see a lot from clients. And so you just have to decide, is that okay or not? Is that a priority that is so important to you that it's worth it and doesn't really matter if you're sacrificing some other goals for that? Or is that something you could trim back just 10% and use that 10% towards something else? So as far as what I do with my clients, I actually use in my financial planning software, you can link any of your credit cards and bank accounts and go backward. If they don't want to link things or they don't want to have me seeing their transactions constantly, I'll ask for the last 12 months. And if they want to categorize it, most people don't, but if they want to categorize it and just hand it to me, then that lets me know they did the homework. And then we can talk about which ones are the heaviest. Obviously, housing is usually a really big piece of that. A lot of times, most of the clients I talk to about budgeting want to save for a home. We can decide, you know, is that worth, based on your income level, based on how much you've saved, how long is it going to take to get to the down payment? Are the payments involved with owning a home worth it, or should you continue renting for a while? So I typically, again, go back about 12 months, look at what they have done, and then be more of an accountability partner to how do we want to review each of these things every month, and how do we think we did every month? Because I find that most clients will, and most clients, including myself, if I'm my own client, I'll download something like Mint, and I'll use it and categorize for a month or two, and then you just forget to use the app. Or it constantly, to me, all of those apps don't actually summarize or categorize the transactions in the way I think of them. So something like, we have a liquor store here called Specs. To me, that could be, I mean, it might say that's groceries, and it's clearly not groceries. To me, it's more entertainment, you know? And so you know you're spending better than any type of software is going to. And so how do I mean, one thing that, or value that I think we as financial planners can add is we keep you accountable to that. You don't just do it for a couple months and then let a bunch of stale data build up.
One of the things I have talked about it is I've tried asking clients to categorize expenses sometimes, and many times I feel it's not necessarily worth the effort. There's a lot of time and energy that goes into it and not as much benefit from it. I really focus on if you're saving enough, I kind of don't care what you're spending your money on. But I'm curious, so how do you think about that both in your own life and also in conversation with clients, kind of how much towards debt, how much towards savings, and the benefit of that categorization?
So I think the benefit lies in the clients I specifically serve. So if I'm theoretically, if I'm working with a client that, or a couple who is in their 40s or 50s and have a fair amount of savings, but really want to ramp that up, they likely are kind of set in their career. They know what their raises are going to be. And maybe you don't need to focus so much on exactly how much you spent on groceries in the last month. A lot of the clients that I work with are in their 20s or early 30s. And so they have a really long time horizon from an investment perspective. As long as they're saving something, I feel great about that, because they might change jobs 5 more times before they find the career that they like. They might have credit card debt that we need to handle. So I think specific budgeting is so much more important when you're younger and have so many more levers to pull. Whereas once you get a little older, income is higher, hopefully. Debt is lower, hopefully, as far as student loans or credit cards or things like that. Hopefully you've learned those lessons and maybe you don't need to focus as much on exactly what you're spending in each category. Does that make sense?
So do you find that the categorization helps people with their future actions? Is that kind of what you're referring to, where maybe they'll try to be just a little more conscious of how much they spend going out to eat? And is that in line with what they want to do?
Yeah, I mean, a great example is that I've seen many, many times is the main thing that I included, that I spent in my 20s and 30s, I spent a lot of money on restaurants and going out with friends. Another big piece of that in the last, since I've been in college or grad school, is delivery. Things like Uber Eats, things that show up at your door. The delivery fee, the service fees that they add to that, the tips that they add to that, it's just amazing how much, when you could, I mean, realistically get in your car and go drive through and not have to pay all those fees. You know, it's little bitty things like that where if somebody realizes they're spending 25% of their budget on food and going out, maybe they go to the grocery store a little more and don't order in quite as often. It, maybe not. I mean, but those are the kinds of things that I'm looking for. I mean, if they, for example, spend a huge percentage of their budget on shopping, are there different stores you could try? Or could you maybe think, I'll spend X per quarter and try to live up to a shopping budget a little bit better? I mean, there can be some behavioral things in there as well, but it's really just looking for the largest percentages of spend in your budget and see if it's worth exploring changing some of those.
Okay. So a couple of themes that I'm picking up that relate to conversations I've had with Trishul. When it comes to things like happiness, I can see the socialization aspect of going out to eat being really important to just being happy and your own well-being. But the shopping side falls under the material purchases that have shown don't impact happiness. I'm curious, and say like the Uber Eats, like, yes, spending the energy to drive to the place to save yourself money is probably the better deal. Like, just don't be lazy kind of advice. But I'm curious, have you thought about it from that perspective of maybe you're spending so much on going out to eat, but it's okay if you're meeting up with friends because there's other well-being benefits. Don't order in as much and sit by yourself and eat, or don't kind of spend the restaurant and the restaurant and order out budget on something that doesn't provide another benefit at the same time.
I think that is a great point. And if all of us as financial advisors could tell our clients that stuff and they would listen, then that would be one thing. I think what's most important with respect to, is it material? Is it experiences with friends? What makes people happy is different for every human. So it could be possible that if someone's spending a bunch of money on shopping and a bunch of money on eating out or ordering in, it's not up to me to tell them which one I think is more important. It's up to me to ask a lot of questions as to, tell me about your shopping. Tell me about what motivates you to go shopping. Tell me about what you're typically looking for. Is shopping something that gets you out of the house and you really enjoy walking around and looking at things? Is shopping just do you feel the need you have to keep up? Typically, I don't even ask questions that detailed. It's more just tell me about this and what else and what else, which again, I'm trying to glean what they do get the most joy out of. And I think that I have my preconceived notions of what I should spend the most money on, and each of us on this podcast do, but I think we have to be really careful with how we approach clients with telling them what to do, because suggesting, because we just really might rub them the wrong way, or they might feel that we don't understand them, because everybody is different and gets joy and gets pleasure from different things. So I think we have to approach it with an open mind. And if they say, I get equal pleasure from both of those things and I'm unwilling to change, to stop one or the other, then maybe could we approach it with how could we spend a little bit less? Or could you wait until you get your year-end bonus to think about a big shopping spree? Would that feel different? And you could kind of try to, it's really hard with spending ultimately if you're trying to tell somebody what to spend and not to spend on. But I think asking those questions is really important, because it might be that they didn't even realize how much of their budget they were spending on those things.
I see. So you're thinking the first step is just making sure that they're aware, where they didn't necessarily find that much joy in the shopping, that it's okay for them. But then you point out, well, 30% of your budget's going to shopping. If you don't enjoy it that much, could you cut this out? And they might be like, oh yeah, I don't like it that much. It's we thank you for pointing this out. Is that kind of what'd you
well,
say?
Well, and things like any subscription model. So things like Stitch Fix or a lot of these things that will automatically send you things. I mean, Stitch Fix is something where they'll send you 6 articles of clothing and you decide what you want and you can send it back. Well, if you have clothing automatically coming to you that is in your style, then it's going to be a lot more tempting to spend money, and that you can get that as often as monthly or maybe even more frequently than that. But you can also now stretch that out to every 2 months or quarterly. So for those people that are spending money every single month on things, I mean, you can also subscribe to or get a subscription of I think it's Daily Harvest. You can get food sent to you periodically that you put in a blender and make. So there's a lot of these things that are automatic, maybe build up in our fridge or build up in our closet, that we could actually talk about those things. So awareness really is, I mean, if you really love shopping, cancel Stitch Fix and go out and shop once a quarter. You know, things like that. So a lot of these things that have made it so easy on us also put a lot of pressure on a budget.
Do you use Stitch Fix?
I actually did just look at a bunch of those and review a bunch of those. That's why it's top of mind to me, because I hate shopping. It gives me anxiety. I get really nervous anytime I go into a dressing room. I hate it. And so I actually have thought, because I, you know, I look in my closet and everything's really old because I never go. And usually what I had done growing up and even now is go once or twice a year and spend a bunch of money, which whether or not you're prepared for that with your budget is, I mean, I say a bunch of money, it's not that much. But so what I've decided to do now, because I hate shopping so much, is quarterly have these people send stuff to me that theoretically is exactly what I want. And you can specify how much you want to spend on each item so I can keep it within my budget. And I'm trying that. So I'm a work in progress myself.
So what are some of the things that you have noticed of yourself in the past that you've done this sitting down with your husband, looked at your expenses and thought, this is what I need to change and why?
The biggest one for me is building up that savings level. I think growing up, things always just worked out. So whether or not money was tight 1 year or not, my dad just always had a really good attitude about things and they somehow worked out. Clay he creates full spreadsheets of exactly where every dollar is going in our life and exactly how much our savings is going up or down. And that is, so I say, you know, I feel like we're doing pretty good. And he says, well, from last year, we actually have less savings than we do this year. And I say, well, but I left my job. We knew this was going to happen. You know, so it's very interesting. We think about things differently. He likes a really big cash cushion, whereas I don't mind having a lower one, knowing that we're building towards something else. So that's been something that's really interesting to me. The other piece of it is acknowledging that going out and going out to dinner and nice dinners and things like that were one of the largest pieces that I was spending money on. When we had all this debt to pay down and when we were adding to our savings for a down payment and for me to leave my job, we cut that out completely. And I noticed my happiness drastically changed because of that. So it's not that we have to go out. I generally realize that I'm not as happy on a day-to-day basis. And so what we did from that is, it took me a long time to pinpoint what it was, but it was that I just need to go out to dinner. It really, that experience is so important to me. And so now we do prioritize, try to do a date night a week. We're not every Thursday type of people, but we try to go out to dinner and realize that he kind of has to suck it up and spend some money on a nice dinner. And I only get one a week, you know? And so that one is something that's really important and did very largely increase my happiness. So it's a really good lesson for any of us or for clients that you can't completely cut something out because you're spending a lot of money on it. You really need to look at the happiness you get from it. And that was something that happened to me in real time.
It sounds like you did overcome a lot of issues in your personal life and with your spending. that other people may have. Are there any common traps or other common reasons that people kind of fail and give up with their budgeting or spending that you think they might be able to fix?
I think the biggest give up thing is, or at least anytime I make a meal plan or any type of plan for myself, I love the planning. Obviously, I'm a financial planner. I love the planning process. I think the biggest thing that the biggest trap people fall into is the amount of time they continue that plan. So, I mean, we have a multiple billion-dollar diet industry for a reason, right? If people could just stick with something, then they wouldn't need any of these different diets or things like that. I think the very same thing happens with spending. If you decide I'm only going to spend $100 on ordering food per month. Well, here's what that looks like. Because every time somebody orders something from Uber Eats, again, I'm looking at multiple clients and seeing this, and from myself, it's about $30. So really that's three times of ordering in food. If you are somebody that orders in food three times a week, that's a drastic change to your life. And maybe you can do it on the first month, but it's going to be really hard to continue to do that. You're going to get tired. Work's going to be really stressful 1 month, and you're going to overspend. And then you're going to beat yourself up and quit on the plan. So I think small changes are really important. I think not trying to put yourself on a crazy rigid spending schedule is so, so important. It's all about small incremental changes that you can hopefully continue for forever.
So for your weekly date night with your husband, how much of that do you think how much of your happiness is the anticipation and the experience versus just the food aspect?
Yeah, the food I don't think is that big of a deal to me. It's more so sitting out and about and ordering a really good bottle of wine and just sitting and talking deliberately, not just sitting on the couch or both of us on our phones or something like that. It's just the act of kind of getting dressed up, going out to someplace nice, and knowing that we're just going to sit and date. I mean, it's something that as you're married longer and longer, it's cannot be overestimated.
That reminds me, before kids, my wife and I would actually take our dog for a 3-mile walk, and almost every night it included a stop at Starbucks. Like, that was part of our routine. And we had joked around that Starbucks was our marriage insurance. It was just like we'd stop at Starbucks and then we'd go on this really long walk that ended at a park. We'd play fetch with the dog. We'd try to find other things, but that's always our marriage advice to newlyweds, is that going out and finding time for, like you said, that deliberate conversation. Because if you don't have your phones with you, then you talk for an hour or two.
Mm-hmm. Going back to my childhood, when it was our birthday, we got to choose anywhere we wanted to go to dinner. And that was, when you're growing up and you guys both have kids, you do a lot of cooking at home. And you do a lot of macaroni and cheese and chicken tenders and things like that. And so to be able to pick anywhere, even when you're 10, who knows what I picked back then. But then you get into high school and you know what a nice steak dinner is. And so you get to choose a really nice steak dinner. I think that's a big part of why I get so much pleasure out of doing that even now.
What about you, Trisha? What's your date night marriage thing? Maybe before kids or since you've had kids, because that's a big change.
Right. Well, we do like the meals. The meals are always pretty neat. We also like to throw in activities as well. Sometimes they can be the dinner and movie, but we also found that if there's activities where we're physically doing something, we seem to find some enjoyment out of those ideas. And it can just be like, you know, playing a board game, or there have been these types of scavenger hunts that maybe you have heard about where you go online and there's these puzzles hidden around a certain town and you can go try to solve them. And it gets a little interactive, so it keeps things a little lively. We're also a big fan of these escape rooms that have been popping up here and there. I don't know if you guys have tried that yet,
But these are just things where we like doing puzzles and we like doing these different types of games. So we found pretty neat things out of those. And then there's other activities that we've gotten into recently, like pottery or painting and things like that. So we found enjoyment out of adding variety to the types of things that we include in our date life.
Escape rooms have been my birthday treat the last few years. I love them so much.
Now might be a good time to mention that that's been actually one of the harder things for Clay and I to figure out what we like, because I am not a game player or like an escape room type of gal, rarely even a putt-putt type of gal. So he is very into all of that. And even growing up, I hated playing games. I think because I was so hyper competitive about it, I would turn into such a nasty person when I lost. But I just never did it. I never did much of that. So we've been thinking about things like, would tennis and not actually scoring tennis, would tennis be good? This week we're actually doing a puzzle together, which is fun. I love puzzles. Puzzles are not, you don't have a winner. Both people are trying to do the same thing. So I know once we have kids, I'm going to have to bite the bullet and be a game player. But for now, I'm holding out as long as possible.
Could you like resist your competitive urges in a game that's more chance-based? So like will you get upset if you lose at Chutes and Ladders?
Probably. I remember getting mad at losing at Hungry Hungry Hippo when I was little. Chutes and Ladders.
You have no control. I mean, Chutes and Ladders is completely random.
Yeah. Because I would think I could control it. It's just, yeah, it's a weird thing, but it's something that has been true my whole life and I'm going to have to grow out of, but I'm not ready yet. Just not there.
Now we're kind of talking about the idea of things that make you happy and just things that people enjoy in life. And it sounds like you are a little conscious of not doing the things that you don't want to do, even if like your husband enjoys them. What are some things that you have noticed in the last few years or in your working career, your life, that you have done with happiness in mind or with your well-being in mind? What are some conscious actions that you've taken to live the life you want?
One thing that has always been really important to me is travel. And it's something I would say 90% of clients say that they really value. I think that something that Clay and I have done that's really upped the happiness level without pushing too hard on the budget are everybody lives within driving distance of some place beautiful. So an example that we did is we took a vacation to Arkansas. And Arkansas, it doesn't sound like a crazy, amazing vacation destination, but there's the Ozark National Forest there. And it's actually really hilly, ton of forest that you can hike all over the place. And Arkansas, because it's Arkansas, is not that expensive as far as renting a place to stay or finding a VRBO or something like that. And so we were able to take a trip and stay in a couple of different cities and do a lot of hiking in again, maybe not most people's vacation destination. I mean, it's not Maui or Cancun, but there are things you can do when you're tight on a budget or when you're trying to pay down debt that still are really enjoyable. And both of us really love to hike, and Dallas, Texas does not have a lot of hiking facilities. So other things to me that make me really happy, exercise is definitely one of them. Something that I've recently decided to invest in is bar classes. So it's not really dance classes, more like strength training classes. And they're way more money than I would normally spend on exercise. But the joy I've gotten out of it, again, now that we've bought the home, paid off our debt, we have a little more cash flow to do things like this. And the joy of it is so much more than the pain in my side that I feel from spending a little bit more. You don't have to spend a bunch of money on exercise to enjoy it. But I found that this particular class is something that I do really enjoy. Another thing that stress relief is really important for me and brings me a ton of happiness, because stress is something that I don't feel at the time, but then I have a physical symptom of later. So I know that stress is a big issue for me. And so personally, I actually have started investing in acupuncture and Eastern medicine. To me, if nothing else, and I think I've told you guys this before, if nothing else, it's a forced nap And so it's a forced either meditation or nap, however you want to view it. But I think it's something that mental well-being is really important for me, physical well-being through exercise. And then you can take vacations and not spend thousands upon thousands of dollars. I don't know. You guys might disagree with kids, but.
We drive everywhere. We have yet to take a plane flight with all five of us.
Yeah, so our Arkansas trip was only 4 hours away, which compared to driving to Colorado or something is 15 hours away. You can still do some hiking and only be, we drive most everywhere. Unless you can play the credit card game and try to get a bunch of points and try to get a companion pass on Southwest or something like that and try to save. But you got to spend a lot of money to get those airplane benefits.
What else do you do with happiness in mind?
I really do enjoy cooking. I really do enjoy, we are fortunate enough to live in an area just north of Dallas where there's a lot of deliberate green space. So again, being outside is very important. I really love reading. Reading doesn't cost much if you have a library nearby. And then again, it's a very strange shift in mindset, but now that the amount of money we are saving and the amount of money that we are paying towards debt, just being able to think a little bit more with an abundance mindset without overspending. It's been a strange shift, but it's okay to spend some money on things that make you really happy if you've accomplished your big goals as far as debt and as far as savings go.
And it's really great that you've made this transition, especially after starting your business and moving away from a 9-to-5. I'm curious to know, was there something that came up that you really weren't looking out for that kind of made you think twice or shifted your thinking a bit?
Yeah, I think the biggest hurdle for me has been when you work for a company, you're given too much work to do. You know your day is going to be full, and or you can kind of putz around on the internet a little bit every once in a while because it's on someone else's dime, you know? So I think the organizing of the day has been the biggest shift for me of what should I be thinking about? What's most important? You know, you don't have an accountability partner in the form of a boss. I would say that study groups that I'm in are really good accountability, but I think that would be the biggest change for me of you kind of, to me, you take advantage or you don't appreciate how busyness can be a positive thing until you start your own business and are trying to find every single incremental client and what should you be spending your time on, what's going to give you the most value when you're just starting a business. But at the same time, the positive side of that coin is I can go for a 30-minute or an hour-long walk in the middle of the day and not have to worry about what my boss thinks about that or getting fired for taking a walk in the middle of the day. You can, if you're not feeling well, you don't have to actually take a full day off of work. You could still get some work done. If you want to take some extra days off, you're free to do that. I know for you guys, you can take kids to school. You can pick them up. You know, there's a lot of positives that outweigh the what am I supposed to be doing today feeling.
What are some other big picture piece of advice that you give to clients, whether it's related to happiness, spending, tracking, spending? What are some of the kind of themes that you try to help clients with? It could be life planning, could be student debt, could be investments. What are your big picture thoughts that you see with clients?
I think automation is the largest one. Again, the idea of if you as a client don't feel you can control how much you're spending on things, then automate it to where you are given a fixed budget in your checking account every month, meaning automate debt payments, automate your savings. And that way, no matter what you do with what's left in that checking account, it doesn't matter because you've already taken care of the things that are going to build your wealth over time. I think another one is don't look at how you're doing overall as a family or as a person growing your wealth too often. I mean, it's something that down to investment performance, I used to at my prior job go over performance quarterly with clients. And all that does, in my opinion, is induces more stress. what can happen from quarter to quarter is not important to what's going to happen 30 years from now and how you've built your wealth. I try to limit it to annually if possible. But same thing, whether you have a huge retirement portfolio or not, look at your balance sheet, your all of your savings, all of your investments, the value of your home versus the debt, your mortgage, student loans. Try to make sure that that's going either less, it's basically moving in a positive direction. So you're either your debt is going down or the positive side is going up. And again, if I could tell those listening or my clients one thing, it's try to make your balance sheet just a tiny bit better every single year. And if you have a time horizon that's 50, 60 years long, which some of my clients do, that really is the most important thing. I mean, you know, let's try to make it a little bit better each year. And then when you're 60 or 50 or even 45, let's see how we're doing towards retirement. It, as far as life planning goes, I don't know that many people will retire that are in sort of Gen X, Gen Y. Retirement is something that came from the industrial age when your body gave out. I don't know that that's something that we're all going to need to do in the service-related industries that we're seeing more of today. So what are things that will make you happy? Make sure you're still saving, make sure you're paying down debt, but what are things that can make you the most happy in every stage of your life, not just when you're 65 to 70?
Yeah, really good stuff. And I like the long-term approach that you bring to that understanding. I'm also curious to know, who's your ideal client? Do you get a certain type of client more often than others, or do you feel like certain types of clients target you specifically for a certain reason?
Yeah, so the clients I typically work with are, I'm about half and half right now. The younger half are people I would say very similar to me or have gone through the things I've gone through. I don't know that I picked a niche specifically, but a lot of these women that I'm working with, they're primarily women, but they're people that are in their 20s and 30s and have the mindset that I did of, okay, financial planning is still important at this age. It's important the minute that you have an income and the minute that you have your first credit card. It's something that financial planning doesn't have to mean retirement planning. There's so many other pieces to it. So again, people in their 20s and 30s who are concerned about things like budget, how to pay down debt, how to save for a lot of those things that might not be retirement related, homes, things like that. So younger professional women. And then the other side are women that are impacted by divorce or death of a loved one. So I live in Texas. I live down in the South, and there are still a lot of women that hand over financial matters to their husband. And so if something happens to that person, most women will just walk into a bank and say, what do I do with this wealth that we built? And I think there's a lot of conflicts of interest there where, is a bank the best place to go? I guess it depends on your bank and who's working there, but I like to work with women that I think they're a little embarrassed that they don't know more than they do, being slightly older. But it doesn't matter that you don't know anything. It matters that you need to learn. And so I have a really positive experience with educating on that end. And I want women to feel empowered with the wealth that has been built in their family and not feel guilty for not knowing more than they do.
What is your firm name and website if someone wants to find you?
So my firm's name is Laughter Financial, and my website is laughterfinancial.com.
Okay. Well, thank you very much, Molly. We really appreciate you coming in. It also felt really good that you have a lot of the same messages and themes that Trish and I have been talking about for a while. So that felt like a good affirmation on our end that, okay, yeah, we're giving the same advice and seeing some of the same things and trying to help people in similar ways. So thank you very much for that.
Good. Thank you so much for having me. I like working with people and learning about people that think similarly. Money doesn't have to be a negative thing, but it so often is. And so what are small things that each person can do to make their life a little bit better? specifically with regard to money. And I'm glad you guys feel the same way.
Yeah, great stuff, Molly. And thanks for joining us today. We really do appreciate it. And thanks, Aaron and Molly. We had a great chat. And thanks, everybody, for listening.
Thanks.
Thank Bye. You.
Okay, bye.
We appreciate you joining us today for this episode of the Mind Money Spectrum podcast. Be sure to visit mindmoneyspectrum.com to access the entire library of episodes. Remember, it's not black and white, but the wide spectrum of gray area where you get to pursue the freedoms you want in life. Opinions voiced in this material are for general information only and are not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations for any individual. All performance referenced is historical and is no guarantee of future results. All indices are unmanaged and may not be invested in directly. Have a nice day.